Contrary to popular belief, most guys with man breasts cannot just bench press their way to perfect pecs. They have a medical condition called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. A world-renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Lista has perfected the procedure for correcting gynecomastia. Find out more at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. Get off the bench and into the game. Theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
His city, his house. No one beats him in his house. Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. Now, on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Primetime Sports for this Thursday, the 11th of February, 2016. Bob McCown now with John Shannon.
Robert?
I looked over for a second. I thought you were wearing a cardigan, but only for a split second.
No,
I was going to say,
wait a second.
No,
a pullover.
I know what it is.
I know. People on radio don't know that.
Oh, okay. You're right.
We are doing some radio still.
No, we do a radio show that's also on television sometimes.
All right. Sometimes?
Sometimes.
Okay.
John Paul Morosi will join us.
Yesterday was cardigan Wednesday.
You can call me Ray. You had a cardigan on yesterday.
I know.
I am on the. I believe I only have one cardigan.
Yes, we know. We've had this discussion.
Yes, and so
but
I
can't
wear it.
Doesn't your clothing sponsor actually, can't they make you cardigans?
This I do not know.
We need new
people. There aren't that many people that sell, companies that sell cardigans.
Bob.
Well, I don't think the company that I, well, I don't even represent them, that the clothing that I wear makes cardigans.
See, what used to happen was if you said, I want a cardigan or I want a certain type of clothing, the company would go get it, put their logo on it, and it didn't matter where they got it from.
Oh.
That's what used to happen all the time.
Well, this I do not know. I don't spend enough time worrying about it, to tell you the honest to goodness truth. So tonight, the J.P. Morosi will join us in a bit. The Toronto Maple Leafs will play the Edmontons.
Mm-hmm.
A chance for Leaf fans to see the kid, the new kid, in competition against whatever's left of the Maple Leafs, which isn't a whole lot.
Not much. No Kadri tonight either.
Let me ask you what you think of that. So Kadri gives the slash sign, the throat slash sign, and we don't know if anything is going to happen.
$5,000 fine.
That's what I thought he'd get. He thought he'd get a fine.
Yeah, $5,000.
Any chance this is not an injury
and
is another? They've punished him before by sitting him down.
And here, this is how Lou Lamoriello works, is that as he said on your show yesterday, Bob, he did have a talk with Kadri right after the game. He knows, he told him under no circumstances would he condone this action. Obviously, the league agrees with Lamoriello at the $5,000 fine, which is the maximum they could have given Kadri without a suspension. So they announced today he's got a lower body injury. He's not playing. Well, you know what? If I was the Maple Leafs and I was that ticked off at him for what he was doing and I wanted to teach him a lesson, I would announce that he has a lower body injury and I wouldn't play him. And that's the end of it. So you're not playing. We're going to say, everybody, you're hurt, but you're not playing.
Oh,
and
really?
Then that's what I would do. And then you could play Saturday in Vancouver.
Why not announce?
Because
we don't condone this, and we're going to...
They can do that. They can say that we're suspending him for his actions. They could do a team suspension, absolutely.
Well, why not stand up and be a man? Why does everything have to be so secretive
sport? It's not... Because in the end, and I'm thinking
I know you're opining on this.
Because in the end, I think Kadri's a valuable part of the team. And I need Kadri to be a valuable part of the team. So I am ticked off at you. And it's what happened. You know, I worked for a guy for a long period of time that that no one could come in and yell at me and criticize me, and he would have my back. He would have my back. Now, if the two of us were in the room and the door was closed, he would tear me to shreds, but it would just be the two of us. And then I would go out and say, man, oh, man, you know what? He didn't embarrass me publicly. He protected me publicly. I'm going to the wall for this guy. And I would suggest, perhaps, again, just opining, as you say, that the Maple Leafs are saying, you know what, lower body injury. I don't think he missed a shift on Tuesday night in Calgary. Lower body injury, but Nas, you're not playing. You know why you're not playing. And let's leave it that way. And because I want him, well, I want him to come back.
That makes sense. I do understand.
Well, but it's that whole team sport mentality. It's the team sport mentality.
Well, I don't like the team sport mentality.
And we're well aware of that. You know. I mean, and Lou is the king of this. Lou is the players live in the bubble, and I will protect the bubble, and I will deal with inside the bubble. And don't you ever come and criticize me or my team. I will do that internally, and no one will ever hear about it.
Right.
That's exactly how he works. And it's you know, he's had a pretty good career doing it.
What do you expect from the Edmontons and Connor McDavid tonight?
Well,
it's been a kind of a rough trip.
Yeah, he's played five games. They won at home. They won in Ottawa decisively. And then they were a debacle being outscored 13-2 for two games and then lost a tight one in New Jersey. He is so much fun to watch. He is electric. The game, in essence, is 29th versus 28th, but he's worth the price of admission.
Well, buy all that.
He's worth the price of admission. They will play better at home. They like playing better at home. Todd McClellan will make them accountable at home. So I fully expect that this will be a little bit of a fun game to watch, and the Oilers will win. That's me.
What do you expect these two teams to do prior to the trade deadline?
Dump every dead body they can. Both of them. You know, I fully expect that. I mean, there were rumors last week that Justin Schultz was going from Edmonton. I think they're going to try to get rid of Benoit Pouliot. I think they will still try to move Schultz. I think the Maple Leafs are in the similar boat. If you can start to, and we now know, you know, Bob, you were bang on yesterday. We now know that the Maple Leafs are working towards something 2 or 3 years from now. So you know the draft picks are important. If you can get something for P.A. Parenteau, get something for P.A. Parenteau. Even if it's a third round pick, that third round pick could be valuable. I fully expect by the 29th of February we will see a team that we won't recognize even more so than tonight. And then after the 29th, we'll have an opportunity to measure a couple of those young guys that are playing in the American Hockey League for Leaf fans, like Nylander and Kapanen. They will make some sort of an appearance in March. That's my gut.
Here's the intriguing part of this is as the Maple Leafs are having one of their worst ever seasons, their minor league affiliate, the Toronto Marlies, are having their best season ever.
Yeah.
And are number one by, I don't know, 10 points overall.
Yeah, that's good. It was eight the last time I checked. It might
be
more.
Okay. It might be eight. But it's in that neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they appear right now to be clearly the best team in the American Hockey League.
Mm-hmm. One of them.
With a chance to win a championship.
Yeah.
But now the trade deadline approaches at the end of this month. And as you say, it would not be surprising if the Leafs moved 1, 2, 3, 4 peep guys and got back
nothing.
No players.
Correct.
Just picks.
Yep.
What does that do for the last 2 months of the season? It means you have to call guys up.
Yep.
Which means that you probably inhibit or destroy the chances of the Marlies winning.
I don't agree, Bob.
Why?
Well, simply for one simple reason is that the National Hockey League season will end for the Maple Leafs on Saturday, April the 9th. The American League playoffs haven't even started by then. The Marlies will surely be in the playoffs. Send the kids back. And quite frankly, Bob, the American League is a developmental league.
Do you care about winning a championship?
There is one single message in the Lamoriello world. Winning the Stanley Cup.
I get it.
One single message. And so, you know, if you're a season ticket holder of the Marlies, all 12 of you, you know what? You may lose a few games in March. But the kids will be back. The kids will come back. Nylander will be back. Kapanen will be back. Whoever else is on the team that's going to be a player is going to be back. You know, it's you know, that to me, that's they're down there to learn how to play the game properly, right, to learn how to play how Mike Babcock plays. By the way, just one more very interesting little sidebar to the Oilers-Maple Leafs game. The last time the Oilers were here, remember, Connor was hurt. There was lots of hype. It was going to be Connor's return to Toronto. And the Leafs won the game. It was a horrendous game. The Leafs won the game, and young Garrett Sparks got the shutout. Cried on the ice. Mom and dad were in the crowd. Do you know where he is now?
Tell me.
The East Coast Hockey League.
Wow.
You know, Antoine Bebo has taken full reign of the Marlies goaltending position, and Sparks, he had his 15 minutes, and he's in the East Coast League.
Will we ever see him again?
I don't think so. He might see him with the Marlies next year, because I fully suspect Bebo, who I think is a great young talent, could be on the Leaf squad next year.
I will watch with great interest. It is that time of year. It's February the 11th. Spring training doesn't kick off for a few days yet. Yeah. And
Morosi's probably there already.
Well, I was about to say, if you wander down to either Arizona or to Florida and you're there before spring training officially begins, don't think that if you wandered over to the ballpark, you wouldn't see players, because you will. There are players who have probably been there for a while and will be there, and more will arrive as we get closer and closer to the official start of spring training. Will most of them be pitchers and catchers? Yeah, probably. That's probably who you'll see the most of. But there are guys who have already started their spring training regime.
Oh, yeah.
John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports joins us. JP, how are you?
I'm doing great. I thought I was coming on to talk about the FNUF trade, but apparently it's baseball.
Well, what do you think? He played your Wings last night. What'd you think?
Yeah, and the Wings won. Yeah.
They did. The Wings are in good shape. I'm happy for FNUF that at least the chapter of the long running trade rumors are over for him, and I guess we'll see what happens later in the month and how many more picks the Leafs can accumulate between now and then.
When do you head to spring training? What's your plan?
Unclear at this point, Bob. I am hoping, though, to hit both Florida and Arizona. Just the exact travel logistics of it still somewhat uncertain as of now, my friend. But I do resolve to see some sunshine, certainly before the Jays head to Montreal just there at the beginning part of April.
Curious before Bob asks you the important questions. Do you have a preference, Arizona to Florida, when it comes to not necessarily the weather and way of life, but the baseball?
It's a great question, John. I would say that from a convenience standpoint, Arizona is better because you can basically go to one hotel and camp out there for 2 weeks and just go to one place and see everybody you want. In the past, I have very much enjoyed staying at that hotel right next to the arena in Glendale and timing my writing such that when I'm done with my story, I walk over, buy a ticket for whatever value, and then, of course, sit three sections closer to the ice than whatever it says to watch hockey there. But I also think, John, that Florida to me feels more like spring training. Maybe it's because I grew up in Michigan, and so you're more associated with going to Florida for the springtime. But you know, you have the water there. There's more of that romance of the smaller towns, and it feels more like spring training. So I would say convenience factor, convenient access to hockey games. To your hotel, I would say that pushes towards Arizona. But the more romance of it's no longer Dodger Town, but that type of feeling of the old place, the palm trees and the water, Florida has the advantage for me from a standpoint of feeling like spring training.
Of course, I don't get to go to spring training anymore because I guess I'm too important.
Too much of a TV star, Bob.
Here, that they don't want me leaving. Either that or they're just a bunch of cheapskates, which I think the latter is the more accurate thing. But having said that, as best I can recall from days past when The previous owners used to send me down there every year, and for long periods of time too. There have been years where I actually landed there a week before training camp started, and as I said off the top, it is not at all unusual to see guys working out probably a good portion of January and well into February. Have you ever gone down early? And I mean, there is usually more time if you want to get a specific interview with somebody. Usually their schedules are better around this time.
No question. It's the best access of the whole year, I think. And
I do too.
Because the season, once it gets going, is so unrelenting. And if you come to a player in July or August and say, hey, can you sit down for an hour with me for a feature story?
Yeah,
or
good luck.
Meet for lunch. It's harder to do that. But early on in camp, and as you point out, Bob, even before then, you're exactly right. That's the best time. Those days where the clubhouse is open, but the media relations folks aren't really there in a formal setting, and,
right.
and it's not really the formal access starting yet, where you can just kind of grab guys as they go out to work out. It really is. It's the best time of year because, as the old saying goes, and my mentor at the Free Press in Detroit would always say, John Lowe, he'd always say, listen, nobody's in a slump. Everybody that had a good year last year is going to have a better year this year. Everyone that had a bad year last year is going to have a great year this year.
Yeah.
So there's no one's having a bad time. So the optimism, I know everybody jokes at this time of year about, oh, you know, player X or Y is in the best shape of their lives. Well, they all feel that way. And I think as journalists, it's the best time to talk to people because they do feel that sense of optimism. And I think you're right, Bob. It is the best time of year to get it. There's something about, I think, for those of us, whether you live in Toronto or you live here in Michigan, wherever you live, I always tell the story of the first spring training I covered, the real strong message was given to us. That first day of sending pictures back of the Tigers or of the Blue Jays in their home uniforms on the field is proof that we are actually going to, as a people, defeat winter. And that's a very powerful thing, especially coming off of a great season like the Jays had this spring, to show that, you know what, we've gotten through the wintertime, and there's that hope and that promise of things being even better this year than they were last year.
Actually, for me, it was always the Masters. It's funny you
right.
say that.
Well, that is the traditional yeah. first day of spring, yeah. actually, for me. Yeah.
yeah. But let's talk about certain teams and certain situations. I would suggest that the biggest surprise team for me last year were the Houston Astros. Can they continue to surprise? Can they continue to play at that level, John?
I think so, John. And the reason why is their farm system is still strong. And that's important here because when they have the inevitable injuries, when they have the inevitable depth questions, or if they wanted to trade for someone, they can do that. Their upper levels of their system are very, very good. Right now, though, I do think there may be still one player short at either first base or third base. I thought for a while David Freese would be a good fit for them because they're somewhat unsettled at the corner infield positions. But they're a team that I think they've got a pretty favorable payroll for their market size. People forget that's the fourth largest market in the U.S. So eventually when they're going good again, and obviously they are right now, but when they're really going well from a revenue standpoint, they've got the chance to, you know, not be the Yankees or the Dodgers, but maybe in that next tier down, certainly bigger than the Tigers and a great many other teams, just based on the number of television sets and people they have in that market. So I think they'll be very good this year. They're in a very competitive division, John. Of course, it went down to the final day this past season. But I think they'll be right there. Some questions, of course, they lose Kazir from the playoff rotation. But I think overall that they get Doug Fister in there. They have the reigning Cy Young winner there in Dallas Keuchel. So, and, of course, Carlos Correa, one of the best players in the whole sport, even though he's only 21 years old. So a lot to like, I think, about the Astros. And the other teams even that had big jump ups. I include the Jays there in that discussion. The Cubs as well. I think a lot of teams that had surprising seasons in 2015, I think, should be there still in contention in 2016.
Let's talk a little bit about those Cubs. They were obviously very good last year. 97 wins, I think.
97, yeah.
For the Cubs last year, they add Lackey, they add Zobrist, they add Hayward. There is no real reason to believe that the Cubs won't be every bit as good unless last year was a mirage. Do you think it was?
I don't. I think that on paper, now, of course, these are two big words in talking about the Cubs or anyone else, but especially the Cubs, on paper, there is that expectation that they should be even better than they were. But as you point out, Bob, 97 wins, that's a lot of wins. That's a lot of things going right. I think there's this misconception that all of a sudden, oh my gosh, that they'll be so much better this year because now they get a full season from Bryant and a full season from Schwarber and a full season from Russell, and all these young guys are only going to get better. But they were pretty lucky this past year, Bob, with health.
Yep.
Their health was good. Lester was healthy. Arrieta had a second half for the ages. And then they won a one-and-done wild card game, and they still finished in the standings, at least behind the Cardinals, even though, of course, they beat them in the playoffs. So they're in a very, very tough division, probably at least the top – look at the top three, maybe the best 1-2-3 in the major leagues in any division. And so they're going to have a tough go there from the standpoint of their own division. And again, now all of a sudden they're supposed to win. And this past year, it was Joe Maddon and the romance of what Cubs fans could dream about. But now all of a sudden the Cubs are in dangerous territory for their history, which is they're now supposed to win, which is traditionally they haven't won the World Series, period, for 100 years. But they really have struggled, period, in terms of even getting to the playoffs when they've been expected to win. And I compare this season maybe to 2004. Of course, after the Bartman fall, they signed Greg Maddux back to Chicago in 2004, and they were expected to win, and they did not even make the playoffs. Right. And so I'm a little bit concerned there. But Bob, against my better judgment, I will tell you on paper – 1 through 25, they're the team right now that I like the best in the National League.
I don't argue with you. The Dodgers had the highest payroll of any sports franchise in North America last year. They will not repeat that, I don't think, this year. At least I know for sure their payroll will be a lot lower, especially because Greinke's not back.
Right.
His departure, is that an indicator of the fortunes of the Dodgers going in the wrong direction?
Yeah, Bob, if I'm a Dodger fan, I'm a little nervous right now for a couple of reasons. And as you mentioned, the payroll's coming down, but it's just coming from $300 million down to more of the normal $200 million range. So from a far and away superpower to merely another very mighty large market team. But I'm worried about certainly the departure of Greinke. And more than that, though, this is a team, Bob, that had the third lowest run-scoring output in the National League in the second half.
That's right.
And people seem to forget that you look at their lineup, Bob, and where are they better than when the season ended? And Justin Turner had the knee surgery. Grandal had a shoulder surgery. We'll see how both those guys do coming back. Yes, they kept Utley. They kept Kendrick. But I look around, and the rest of the ball club, Bob, they still have a lot of questions in their outfield. There's still way too many outfielders. The depth situation out there is unwieldy. They don't know what they're going to be able to get from Puig, obviously from the standpoint of both his temperament and his production and his health. In center field, Jock Peterson had a horrendous second half. They're trusting a rookie now at shortstop in Seager. So a lot of their offensive problems, Bob, they're no better than they were when they weren't good enough to beat the Mets in the first round. So from that team, they've really lost Greinke, and they haven't really gotten much better. So that, to me, is a bit of a concern. Yes, the Giants, we talk so much. Yeah, it's an even-numbered year, so there's the cliche of, the Giants are going to win the World Series. But the reality is the Giants are better. They've added Cueto, they've added Samardzija, and they also, I think very consequently, guys, they have a very good core of players who came up to the minor leagues together, has played together for a very long time, and knows how to execute in big moments. You saw what Duffy did coming in for Sandoval last year, and Crawford, and Panic, and Belt, and Posey. They've got a very good core of players, of course, Hunter Pence as well. So, and then, of course, you add in the Diamondbacks, who are much better, because they, of course, have Greinke. They've got Goldschmidt, one of the best five players in the National League. So I think the Dodgers' route to the postseason is tougher, guys, than it was last year. And I worry, Bob, about are they really that much better? And I think the answer to that question right now is no.
Let's talk about the Diamondbacks, because at some point, when you're in a market that size, John, the amount of money they invested in the offseason, when does it – I mean, what do they have to do in order to – become credible both financially and in the standings? Because that's the one where you go get Greinke and you get a couple of other guys, and yet, I mean, what kind of factor can they be in that division?
Well, John, I think they're going to be a good team. The question is, of course, going to come if they could be a great team and win the division. But here's what makes Arizona a unique place, and I think you see it. And, of course, we've talked about it before in hockey, but it's true, I think, to a certain extent in baseball as well, that for the Sun Belt franchises in Phoenix and then the two in Florida, you do not have generational fans quite yet. Of course, we're coming up now on one generation basically being born and raised that would have grown up with that team. But I think the avidity of the fans for those franchises that live there, usually their allegiances are somewhere else. It's no different in baseball than from that standpoint than it is in hockey. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're seeing still some residual issues of driving the attendance at the gate and, of course, their TV ratings as well because of that. And I think the Diamondbacks would tell you, I believe that the stat that I've heard before is from a standpoint of per capita. Now, yes, they have a lot of people that live in the Valley in Phoenix, but per capita income is one of the lowest in Major League Baseball, and their ticket prices are commensurately low. And so their revenues for a long time have not been quite what you would expect for what you would assume to be a strong baseball state. And from that standpoint, Arizona is similar to Tampa, is similar to Miami. They know baseball, they like baseball, and in many respects they play baseball there, but the affinity for the Major League franchise in those cities is not what you would think it would be after now a quarter century or so of existence for these teams. So the new TV deal is important in Arizona. That's going to allow them, I think, to spend more. And, of course, they got Zach Greinke as a result of the new TV money. Mm-hmm. But I think, John, the question is a very good one. And at what point in time will we see sort of the Sun Belt franchises become real powerhouses? And I even though there's a very strong baseball playing culture there, I just think there still is not that leap to being a strong attendance culture. And we'll see this year if they have a good team, will the fans get behind it? But they've had to rebrand themselves, new uniforms again this year. And it just seems like it hasn't quite caught on culturally going to the ballpark, except in those years when they have really, really good teams.
With John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports. Last week, I think, I boldly predicted the Toronto Blue Jays would win the American League East comfortably. By 6 or 7 games, I thought. And, of course, I could be 100% wrong.
You boldly predicting it still?
I am.
Okay.
But I've never been wrong, but it's possible that it could happen. I acknowledge for at least once in my life. I don't expect it to happen. I believe I'll be accurate, but nonetheless, I accept that there's a very slim possibility. And let me tell you what I think. Tampa always amazes me because they manage to come up with guys when you think they can't get guys, and we know they don't have any money. And Baltimore is kind of a middling team that has had their one run, right, in my opinion. And the Yankees have a great back end of the bullpen, but not much else, to tell you the honest to goodness truth. And they're old in a lot of places where you don't really want to be old. And then there's the Red Sox. And look, we got a taste of David Price and what he is and what he can be and what I expect him to be in Boston. But if you think David Price is going to make that whole lineup a whole lot better, you're wrong. He's going to make them better every fifth day. But there's 4 days that they got to play games between every David Price start. And you got Ramirez going to try and play first base. And where is Sandoval going to play?
Right.
And there's two big money, potentially impact players that they were going to try and get. They got a bunch of young guys who had a good second half last year who played better when the manager disappeared. Well, the manager's coming back. Is that a factor? There's a whole bunch of things going on in Boston, and I don't trust them for a second, and that's why I think the Blue Jays win this division easily. Your thoughts?
Well, a couple of things there, Bob. First of all, I am right there with you on the Red Sox in terms of being concerned about where they're at. You're right. They had some young players that played well in the second half when the pressure was off. So what I want to know is Rusny Castillo truly an everyday left fielder in this league? Jackie Bradley Jr., can he keep it up? And I think Mookie Betts is for real in right field. And then, of course, David Ortiz, his final season, will he be productive still at his age? The catching situation, still a little bit uncertain there for them. And again, Sandoval, and I'm right there with Ramirez, I do not trust him adjusting to a second new position in as many years. I'm very concerned about Hanley Ramirez on the field, off the field over there with the pressure on him in Boston. I'm really somewhat skeptical, Bob, that as you say, that basically, look at the way the Red Sox made their moves. They basically conveyed to us that they think that the two guys that fix the whole roster are Price and Kimbrell. That was their only problem, and I think that's probably a little short-sighted. Where I differ with you slightly is with Tampa Bay. I think they're going to be really, really good. Yes, their pitching depth, I think, is excellent. I think actually, if I had to sit there and trust, if you were going to tell me right now at the end of the season which AL East team will have the best starting rotation ERA, I believe the answer there is Tampa Bay.
Well, they consistently produce young pitchers out of nowhere, and I have a great deal of respect for them.
Yes. And they're going to get even better. I think that they have some prospects coming up there in the pitching area that are going to make them better. Of course, Chris Archer was a Cy Young candidate. Blake Snell is a name to listen to there on the pitching side for the rotation. But why I like the Rays so much right now, Bob, they've added some serious offensive ability. Now, are they superstars? No, but their issue has always been a lack of lineup depth, where you felt as though once you got past the first four guys, there was a tremendous drop off the rest of the lineup, and they just simply couldn't score enough runs. But they got Dickerson from Colorado. They got Brad Miller, who can hit. His defense is a little questionable, but he can hit. They were able to make some more moves. They got Logan Morrison, Steve Pierce. So you go around the ball club, and they really, I think, improved themselves offensively in a number of different areas. So do I think they're going to score as many runs as the Jays? Of course not. No. But they're going to be, I think, potentially league average offensively. And we know their pitching is going to continue to be well above average. So if that's the case, well above average pitching and league average offense in these days, Bob, is often a playoff team. So I really think the Rays are going to find a way to get to the playoffs. Maybe it's not as a division champion, but I think at least a wild card there for Tampa Bay this year.
Yeah, they may not score as many runs, but their run differential might be the same.
Precisely. Oh, they're going to be excellent pitching-wise. And again, Snell is the name we talk about so much as the Super 2, and when can you call up the top prospect. Blake Snell is the name that's been talked about a lot in the industry this wintertime as that guy we're going to hear about a lot in spring training, and then potentially in the first couple months of when is he going to show up. Of course, they could get a healthy Alex Cobb for the first time. Of course, he didn't really pitch last year. And then Matt Moore can now come back. Drew Smyly, Odorizzi, they've got a really good rotation, guys, and I think that if their lineup is just a little bit better, and I expect it will be, especially if Desmond Jennings is healthy, they're going to be really good. I think they're going to be a really, really good team this year after somewhat of a quiet 2015.
Morosi, you have you've talked me into acknowledging Tampa Bay is well. I didn't know who to put second.
Okay.
And now I'm comfortable in saying that it will be the Blue Jays by 7 games over Tampa Bay. Thank you very much.
Unless you change your mind next week.
And likewise, I'm still leaning towards Toronto in the first spot of the AL East, but I think it's going to be a very, very tight race. I do think the Yankees are going to take a step back this year, though.
Nah, they ain't going to be that tight. Morosi, we hope Fox gets their act together and decides to send you to spring training and sooner rather than later because it's warmer there.
Thank you, Bob. We'll send that out to L.A. and we'll get that figured out. In the meantime, next time we talk, I'll try to have some more intelligent comments on the Red Wings trade deadline acquisition.
Please do.
Okay? Yeah, John, you'll be talking to John alone, though.
Oh.
Thank you, Morosi. Goodbye.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thanks.
John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports joining us. Well, he convinced me on Tampa. But not
what,
that they
convince you to make them second.
Yeah, convince me to make them second. Well, I lumped all the others together.
Okay.
And now he's convinced me. I
think it's a 3-horse race. I really do.
You think Boston's in there?
Yeah, I do.
I don't.
Well, we'll see.
I wonder about, they didn't start playing well till it was, two things happened. It was over and their manager got sick.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to bring that manager back. You've got at least one really bad dude in the clubhouse. And that can ruin, one bad ingredient can ruin the whole pie.
Is he in charge of the chicken?
He might be. And we know he can't play left field, and I doubt he can play first base, any idiot can play.
We'll see. I still think it's going to be a 3-team race.
Well, good for you. I think it's going to be a race at all when all is said and done.
All right. Until you change your mind next week.
What exactly happened in Los Angeles with the NFL's bidding process to see what teams would be allowed to move into that coveted market? The plan was to allow two. As of today, only one is there. Another one was invited, and so far haven't said yes or no. The third team is now looking at other markets, like Las Vegas, like San Antonio, or maybe to sell the franchise altogether. What was the game that was played? Our next guest knows the answer. He'll join us to talk about it when Primetime continues in a moment.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
ATV for the Army. Colin and Shannon, yes.
Garrett Sparks is back from the East Coast League. Went down for one game. Seriously.
So
one game.
So much for that analysis of his imploding career.
Well, if I had told the story yesterday, it would have been right.
You would have been right for one day.
Well, that's all it counts.
Yeah, well.
But look who's talking.
Never been wrong.
Wow.
So it's impossible to do justice to this story in the 9 minutes that we have here, but let's do the best we can. What exactly happened with this NFL LA situation that is, as of this moment, still unresolved? We thought we had it. We thought it was resolved. We thought the Rams were going. We thought the Chargers were going.
Yep.
The Rams were going to be the principal tenant.
But the Spanos family didn't necessarily think that was the way to go.
I guess they didn't think that was a good idea. And then San Diego steps up. And so now there's conversations going on there. And it looks like Davis in Oakland is where Oakland usually is, on the outside looking in.
Yeah, across the river. Across the water, I mean.
Don Vannetta Jr. wrote a really interesting piece for ESPN and Outside the Lines. And I'm not exactly sure where the billing should be, but he joins us now to talk a little bit about it. I hate doing this to you because I have so little time in relative sense to go through this whole explanation. But in a nutshell, just to get us started, was this a deal that was done essentially by the owners and not the league?
Yes.
Good, we're back on time.
Good, we're back on time, yeah.
It was... What we tried to do with this story is peel back the curtain and show people. I think you guys are indicating that this whole process seems so confusing, and the coverage of it was so piecemeal that we, Seth Wickersham and I, went and tried to really tell what happened behind the scenes in those closed-door owners' meetings. And what we found was a very messy, very bloody, very bitter process. And the bottom line is the guy with the most money got what he wanted.
And that's
may not surprise people, but it's pretty interesting how it all played out.
Well, and that's the multi-billionaire who owns the Rams, correct?
The Kroenkes.
That's right. Stan Kroenke, worth $7.6 billion, second wealthiest owner in the NFL after Paul Allen of the Seahawks. He got what he wanted.
But Don, there were a ton of stories coming out of those meetings that Jerry Jones was the peacemaker, the broker. Was that an exaggeration?
No. In fact, I think that Jerry Jones has proven himself in this process. He was the total deal maker, and he actually showed how much power he really has, in the sense that he basically steamrolled the old guard legacy owners. I'm talking about Robert Kraft of the Patriots, yeah. John Mara, the co-owner of the Giants, Art Rooney II of the Steelers, Jerry Richardson of the Carolina Panthers. Those are the guys that usually flex the power. So does Jones. But Jones was on the opposite side of them. Those four guys wanted Dean Spanos and the Chargers and the Carson Stadium project with the Raiders. And Jerry Jones found a way to override their wishes. They were the members of the LA committee that voted 5-1 for Carson. To get Kroenke what he wanted.
Why did they want Carson? The Carson project was a smaller project. I think it was 65,000 seats, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
What was the appeal for them in the Carson project?
A couple of appeals. The first one was it would resolve what is commonly known around the league as the California dilemma. You've got both the Raiders and the Chargers playing in 50-year-old baseball stadiums, antiquated ballparks, not fit for football, not doing any justice to either franchise in the revenue departments. And they're in a state where the taxpayers are not going to pony up a nickel for a football-only stadium. So Carson solves that California dilemma. But the second reason, which I think is just as compelling and maybe even more so, is that the old guard owners just really like Dean Spanos. Dean is a guy who has earned their loyalty and respect for years. He's heavily involved in league issues, does a lot for the league behind the scenes. And so the Krafts and Maras of the world really felt it was Dean's turn. He had suffered for so long in San Diego, and they set aside, I think, their concerns that Carson is, as you put it, not as beautiful a facility as the one in Englewood. It certainly isn't. It's smaller. It was more modest. But they set all that aside, I think, in large part for their because of their personal loyalty and feelings for Dean Spanos.
Okay, so they like Spanos, but it would be equally accurate to say that they weren't really thrilled with Kroenke. Because he's a bull in a china shop, isn't he?
Absolutely, yes. That's exactly right. I think that Kroenke is a guy who doesn't always attend league meetings, doesn't have a lot of patience for league politics, thought the entire relocation process was sluggish, and was told by Jerry Jones, just go for it. Just ignore the league office. Ignore what the owners are telling you to slow down and just go. One of the most important moments in this whole process was in December of 2014 when Roger Goodell was up against the ropes because of his handling of the Ray Rice domestic violence scandal. And at that moment, both Spanos and Kroenke were getting ready to move toward L.A. And Art Rooney II, the owner of the Steelers, called both Kroenke and Spanos and said, stand down. We don't have the time right now. Goodell's distracted. Please don't do anything. And Spanos, being the loyal guy that he is, said, okay. Kroenke, though, was told by Jones, just go. And just a few weeks later, the first week of 2015, he announced, I'm headed to Englewood, and unveiled the $2.7 billion palace that he plans to build there for the NFL.
So, Don, what do the Chargers do now?
They're in a really tough spot. They have the option to go to Englewood to be the second team in Kroenke Stadium. That option expires the middle part of January of next year. But Spanos is going to try one final time with a referendum on the ballot in November in San Diego to get the people of San Diego to agree to pay $400 to $500 million in public money for a football-only stadium in San Diego.
Right.
They have had no appetite to do that for more than 10 years, for 15 years. So why they would maybe do it now, of course, the only reason they would do it is because their backs are against the wall, and they know if they don't vote for it, the Chargers are headed north.
Yeah. We got 1 minute here, so I need a quick answer to this. Davis is the odd guy out. He doesn't get the first option in L.A. His only opportunity now might be if Spanos says no to L.A., and we may not know that for at least several months. Meanwhile, there are whispers that other cities are interested and other people may be interested in buying the Raiders. What's your best guess as to what Davis does?
Well, Davis is in a wait-and-see pattern, as you said,
right.
See what Spanos does. But, Las Vegas is a possibility. I don't know whether the league would go for that, but Sheldon Adelson, the billionaire casino guy in Vegas, is interested. San Antonio has also been discussed, guys, but I would be stunned if Jerry Jones and McNair allow a franchise in Texas.
Too many in Texas.
There's very limited options for the Raiders.
Don, it's a great story. Wow. It's a great tale. Congratulations on it. Thank you very much for writing it, and thanks so much for joining us today. We'll hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Don Van Natta Jr. of ESPN and Outside the Lines. There is, in a nutshell, the essence of the story. You can find it online. But it is, if you're interested in these kinds of things, it is real interesting.
And in the end, as big as the league looks, it's still only as powerful as certain owners make it.
And how interesting that the commissioner of the National Football League essentially got squeezed out of that process entirely.
Yep.
And don't you believe that that was an accident? That was very deliberate.
Making $44 million, you could take me out of the...
I guess.
For a bit.
We'll talk more about that. Glenn Healy, Richard Petty among the guests in the next hour. Stick around. It's primetime.